let's do a little more education
about education. So we had given somewhat of a foundation of the various themes and talked about how it's very possible that we have two interlocking chiyuvim here. By the way, just to ponder this for a second, if we say that there are various components to chinuch, so do we say they're all derabanan? Do we say, it sounds like they are kind of all derabanan, but yet there are Torah sources. And we also mentioned that there is clearly a overarching daraisa of chinuch. So it's worth just kind of re-emphasizing what are our possible sources, minat Torah, midivrei Kabbalah, for chinuch, if we want to point to a pasuk. So what do we have as possible pesukim? Just to get that clarified. Yes? So, v'shinantam levanecha, right? So on the one hand, all right, well, let's list them first and talk about what the pluses and minuses are. Okay, so v'shinantam levanecha would be one. What else? Shalavicha v'yagaycha is interesting because it sounds pretty chinuch parent related. I don't know if it's invoked in this context. The Gemara invokes it both in Sukkah and in Shabbos as a possible mucker for Dinim Drabanan, which is interesting, you know, an overlap in that whole concept. But, okay, yes?
When Avram tells Yishmael to get help out with the serving guest.
Okay, that's actually an interesting choice. So let's build on that for a second. So Jez pointing to the fact that in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, Avram is hosting the guests, and he does a lot for them. He goes to great lengths to provide for them. But at one point, the Torah says that he said to the Nar, who was Yishmael, he told Yishmael to go do it. So that provokes a question, and it's interesting to see some of the literature about that. Why does he not do that himself? Isn't it? Don't we say mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho, etc.? So there, Rashi fills in. And it's interesting because the Gemara in some places imply that there was something lacking in that action, or elsewhere it sounds like there's a reason for it. But Rashi gives a reason for it, Kedei l'chancho b'mitzvos. So Jebediah is seizing on that and saying, oh, okay, so here, Maisa Rav, Maisa Av, look to Avram Avinu, and that's a mocker for chinuch. So I don't know how much we're going to say it's the mocker for chinuch, but go ahead a little bit. So there is a pasuk in Parashas Vayera, not so far after that, which might be a mocker. So you're in the right neighborhood, in the right context. And know what I'm talking about? So it's a little bit of a hard call, I guess. But right after that, there is a discussion that the Malachim come and tell Avram about what's happening. And God says, right after this whole interaction, where Avram apparently really impressed him with his whole act of chesed. So what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? Hamachastanim Avram. How could I conceal anything from Avram? Ki yedativ, because I've known about him that what? Laman asher yitzaveh ezbonav yezbeiso acharav. Right? Did I know that he will command his household and the future generations? Lishmor, what's the language of Pasuk? Sako Mishpat. Lishmor, Darach Hashem, Sako Mishpat. Exact language, something like that. It's important, pretty important Pasuk, you should get it right. So that, the Meshech Chachma has a comment on that, that is a mocker for Chinuch as well. Here it is. So that language says the Meshech Chachma, that's also a mitzvah of chinuch. So we have the Shinatim of Anecha, we have this pasuk of Asher Tzavis Banav. What else do we have, Jebediah?
I was going to suggest this is just to clarify, this is not saying necessarily that over. These are not sources necessarily for the overarching chinuch idea. This could also be for the
Well, we don't know yet. We want to just put everything on the table and see what we can do with them. Yeah. So what else is there? So, it's certainly the pasuk in Mishle is invoked of Chanoch Lenar Al Pidarko. So it's interesting to Claire, you know, whether anyone holds all three of these sources or whether we need any sources if we're dealing with Drabbanans, but it's given what we've seen so far about the various possible roles. So it's interesting to try to assign them all parts. So we have taken as a very much a given that the major capital ches chinuch of raising religious children is certainly incumbent on the mother to a very, very strong degree. So to say that it's all from Vishinanta Muvanecha is a little bit of a problem, because Vishinanta Muvanecha is on its pashtus level interpreted in terms of Talmud Torah, although no reason we can't give it extra layers of interpretation. But the Gemara does use it in Kiddushin to refer specifically to Talmud Torah, and therefore to have it be a mitzvah ha'av al haben. So it is challenging to use that as the source with which we're including mothers. So what we could say, I don't know if this all works out perfectly, but we could basically suggest that there are four different roles here. And that can get confusing, but hey, such is life. Because four might not even be the whole story. There may be more, but you know, we have to just deal with the facts in front of us and follow where it takes us. But the idea that there's a chinuch d'rabbanan that is on the father specifically, and maybe even, we haven't discussed this so much, on the son rather than on the daughter, if that's true. We don't know. I gave you a little bit. How far did everyone get in the extra makaris today? Anyone finish those up, or still more to go? Oh, so we've seen there also some discussion about the Gemara in Nazir. Is the Gemara saying that chinuch is applicable only to the father and only to the son, or does it not mean that? So it's Tosfos that talks about it, other sources that talk about it. We've seen last week there was a Ram that talks about that question. So if chinuch, for whatever reason, on any level, is only about the father and maybe it's only about the son, the best theory we have so far is because it's a subset of Vishinanta Muvanecha, which has those limitations. Right now, still, it's the Din D'Rabbanan. So still, we have to say that it's not exactly Vishinanta Muvanecha. So what's the difference? Presumably, Vishinanta Muvanecha by itself means teach the content of the Torah to the child. The idea that you have to make him act it out, so that's Drabbanan. But it's built on an extension of the Shinanta Muvanecha. So you should, Minatorah, you should teach your child Hilchos Luluv. And Midrabbanan, you should make sure that he takes a Luluv. That's a part of the practical education. Sam?
So just to clarify then, what's the least amount of the Torah's phrasing of this idea that we're willing to put into this din and say, like, that's what, when we implement this din, we're speaking about these couple of things?
I don't know. I don't know if we can decide that one way or another. But I'll try to lay out these parts, and you'll tell me if it gives you any insight into that. So then, we could say, so the problem is, so when we say that, so if we're taking as such a given that the mother is a crucial part of chinuch, we can't say Vishinantam Levanecha is the whole obligation of raising from children. So for that, then Meshech Chachma might help us by identifying this pasuk in Vayera, because that could be about the totality of the religious personality, and that presumably is applicable to both parents. Right, this idea of Asher Tzavos Bamis Beisov B'Shamru Derech Hashem La'asos Tzaka Mishpat. Even though this is Pashtus, is really talking about Chesed. So, if you want to say that, really refers to the totality of the religious personality. But in any event, that's a possible role for that source. Then we have the idea that Chanoch Lanar al Pidargo. So there, now we can understand as an asmachter, Divrei Kabbalah, you know, that's not a pasuk in Chumash itself. We could say the din d'rabbanan of training in mitzvos is connected to that, as some of the sources do connect it, presumably in a smachta kind of form. And there you could say also that the fact that the pasuk continues to say, Gam ki yazkin lo yasur mimena, that when he grows up, he's not going to deviate from it. So the idea of hergel b'mitzvahs, the idea that you are training him so that when he grows up, he will perform the mitzvahs, is again drabanan, but connected to that idea, perhaps. Now, what about the other idea that we've been talking about? That maybe a child should do mitzvahs for his own sake, not because of the future, but because right now he should do mitzvahs. Whether you say so he shouldn't look like an akum, or whether you say simply because he sees them as a good thing. So, does that connect to any of these psukim? So, maybe not. But maybe we don't need it to, because maybe that's what flows from what we discussed, the whole Chatzi Shir comparison that we used, that every mitzvah is its own thing, that you see your father taking a lulav as a tzivoy, you realize then that taking a lulav is a good thing. So each one is its own source. You don't necessarily, it's a svar, basically, within each mitzvah. So it's not an extension of any of these other concepts. Again, maybe you don't need a source anyway, you're dealing with drabanans, but the idea that even to connect it to, that maybe that is a din in every individual mitzvah. Sammy?
Well, maybe we'll have to say then that maybe perhaps in terms of, you know, the goal of teaching a young person now, we would say maybe that, you know, the context of the pasuk of could just fall into the context of Shema and all we're trying to do, and, you know, increase the awareness and understanding of the oneness of Hashem, and therefore, you know, that's fine. Meaning that would be why you would be teaching it at any point.
So say that last part again.
In other words, like, if we're trying to say why exactly we feel comfortable teaching a Na'ar at a young age, perhaps we can gauge it by the context of where the pasuk is placed, meaning where it's placed in Mishlei, or where it's placed or wherever else.
Does that tell us anything? I'm not sure where to go.
No, I would think it does, because maybe, again, like, I would be comfortable saying that the only reason that you would need to be, or maybe not the only, but one of the main reasons you would need to be Mekhan as a child is because it would help you, you know, be able to grasp the full concept of, you know, be a half that Hashem look at from that whole entire, you know, paragraph.
Are you saying that even b'kadnuso, like maybe you should bring the child to a state, or with that I guess we've seen already, right, that if there isn't a value for a child to be doing mitzvos, so then presumably, like we said, the parent has a role in that, and that role presumably is figured out misvara, and presumably applies to both parents. And what you're saying here also is that maybe part of that role is kind of just taking it a step further, if I understand you correctly, not just to tell them what to do, but also to help them appreciate what they're doing, and therefore make it more shy for them to do it.
Right. I mean, if we're going to go as far as to say that we want them to act specifically, they should be like Jews and not anyone else, then that would be like pretty fitting.
Okay, could be. Could be. So now we had. So just to keep all those, that gives us at least four parts. Right, an obligation of chinuch that is an extension of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah Ha'avel Aben, and it takes it into the practical realm. An obligation of raising children in the tradition of Avram Avinu, which presumably should apply to both parents. A notion of training the child in mitzvos, which connected on some level to Chanoch Lanar Al Pidarko, and an idea of children doing mitzvos because they're good things and not doing averos because they're bad things, and everything that flows from that, which may just be a svara within each aspect. Now we'll have to come back to say a little more about that, because I want to talk specifically about how that connects to the notion of Mafresh from Isser, and whether that's the chinuch concept and whether it parallels, or whether that's something else. So that's presumably one of the major things that we still have to cover. Okay, but we left off last time also talking about whether the mitzvot have to be done perfectly or not. So here, what we saw was that the Ritva is one of those who calls our attention to this topic, because the Ritva and Daf Beis and Beis in our Gemara, the Ritva comments on the fact that Hillel Yamalka is expected to have her sons in a kosher sukkah and not a sukkah that has a roof that's too high. And the Ritva says, I feel a need to point out, because there are some people who think that a mitzvah that's done for chinuch can be a stuffed animal, doesn't have to be a stuffed lula, whatever it is, doesn't have to be kosher. So that's a big mistake, and here I am making sure that you know this. And I think we started to point out a couple ways to understand that. Right? Why is it so important that the mitzvah be done properly? Why can't you be mechanech them in a child-friendly way? Why is that so important? Yeah?
Well, one of the things we discussed was giving a false image of what it's supposed to be, how it's supposed to be performed.
Okay, so there could just be a detail in chinuch, right? That the chinuch, by its very nature, should be correct. Otherwise, you're going to cause yourself more problems than you're going to solve. So if you're doing chinuch, you might as well do it properly.
Yaakov
Kamenetsky.
There's a story
about sitting in people's chairs.
Mezuzah.
Mezuzah about having a mezuzah on the top third of the door?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll let you tell your story without interrupting. Okay, no, please.
You're
a wreck
than I am.
No, please. Oh my God. All right, well, basically, his story is that there are people who. Well, because it's interesting, actually, because the first one they're talking about, might as well mention both, and you can consider actually what to do with it. So, because it actually does fit in, so Shkaya for both those stories. So one point is that Rabbi Yaakov in one of the books is quoted as saying to somebody who had put a mezuzah up for their child's bedroom, so they put the mezuzah up low, because the child, understandably, was not so tall, so they wanted the child to be able to hit the mezuzah, touch the mezuzah, whatever it is, so they put it up low that it should be accessible. But really, the din is that the mezuzah is supposed to be in the upper third of the door. So Rabbi Yaakov said that it's better to do it that way, even better to do it properly, and that even though it's nice, you want to accommodate the child and make it accessible to him, it's not productive to try to be mechanech in a way that is not going to comply with the actual process of the halacha. So that's one point. But there was another story, I think it was also about Rabbi Yaakov, that somebody felt very bad that his young child had sat in Rabbi Yaakov's seat in the Beis Medrash, in the shul, whatever it was, and he felt he had to give his child the whole speech about this. So Rabbi Yaakov, once the story was about somebody else, I think it was about Rabbi Yaakov, but either way, it'll work for our purposes, said to him, you don't have to give your child the whole speech about this, because the whole point is to address how they're going to be when they get older. So when he gets older, presumably as an adult, he's not going to come do that. It's only because he's a little kid that he thinks that this is something he can do. So as an adult, he'll understand this is inappropriate. There's no need to give your kid a whole good joke about it now, because it's not going to affect how he's going to grow up. He didn't see it as a part of...
contrasting stories.
Maybe. The point being that for the child, it was a different kind of experience, which goes a little bit to, maybe I'll just say, because we're aiming to wrap things up tomorrow, so I'll just say a little bit of a word about this now. You know, the whole question, it is a big question. I'll give you some Makorish look about this tomorrow. It's a big discussion, which I alluded to last week when we were talking about the Das issue. The question of, if we're not going to feed our children Yisturim, so how do we feed children on Yom Kippur? So we mentioned the approach of Shlomo Kluger. We focused on one detail and how he presented it. That was a little hard for us to understand. But the point is that we have to figure out with every din, does it make sense for the child? Or is it comparable for the child? So it's one thing, okay, the father doesn't eat chazer, the child can also stay away from chazer. But for a child to fast, yes, maybe it's a sakana, but maybe that's the reason we feed children on Yom Kippur. But it's dangerous to assume that we're only going to feed our children when it's Pikuach Nefesh on Yom Kippur. We feed children pretty much L'chadchila, depending on their age, but young children. And we also tend to be making the other Yom Kippur, which is a whole discussion. I'll give you a whole round to look at about this tomorrow. But part of the relevance there that some of the Achronim note, whether you say it the same way as Rav Shlomo Kluger with his focus on the word das, but just simply the fact that it's a whole different experience, that for the child to fast, he's going to really undergo a whole different process than an adult. For an adult, it's an unpleasant but manageable experience. For a child, it's just a whole different level of something to endure. So maybe that's simply why there's a difference as far as that's concerned. If it's going to be perceived fundamentally in a different way as a child than as an adult, that affects how these things play out. So here, we're interested in what the child is doing. So he's saying that, okay, the child is doing something childish because he's a child, and when he grows up, he's not going to do something that's childish. While here, we're talking about teaching him the mitzvah of mezuzah. So while we're teaching him the mezuzah, we have to teach it in the proper way. We also mentioned that story about the Aven Ezer not making kiddush when he was eating as a child, because what's the point of making kiddush? I'm not going to eat on Yom Kippur when I grow up, and how that perhaps also connects to these two different views of what exactly chinuch is about. So back to the Ritva. So the Ritva says that we have to do things properly, and one approach could be because we don't want to miseducate him. What's the other possible reason that he has to do all mitzvahs kedasa kedin? All right, I think we started to discuss this last week. What's the other reason we might say that it's important that the din be done al pi halacha? Yeah.
So when he gets to bar mitzvah, we don't expect him just to perfectly follow all the commandments.
Well, that's some of the first one, right? So that's basically the first reason. But a different reason could be that if we really think that it's valuable for ketanim to do mitzvahs because they're good things, then we need to do the mitzvah. We need to follow the din. So a possible nafkamina of these two reasons, or a question that we saw, is that we saw that even within the day of the ritva, the ritva himself has this apparent stira. And we find this in Shulchan Aruch as well, that even though we're makbid to give the katan something that is kosher, that you have to take a lula that's an actual lula of the right size and is not made out of stuffed animal stuff. So on the one hand, we're concerned about that. But there are aspects of Hilchos Kinyanim that we're willing to be makel on. And we know that on the first day of Sukkot, you have to own your lulav. But we don't seem to be so concerned about a katan owning his lulav. So, for example, there's a discussion that when you have to share the lulav, so it's a problem to be makneh the lulav to a katan because he can't be makneh it back to you. So if you need the lulav to still be available to you afterwards, it's a problem. So the Ritva talks about giving it to the katan and then retroactively being levatel the kinyan. So it turns out he never had it. He never owned it. So that he wasn't yotzei if he didn't own it. So it seems like the Ritva is not worried about that. Now you could draw a distinction. Right? You could say, well, there's a difference between a lulav that he doesn't own and a lulav that's too small or made out of plush material or whatever it is, right? What's the difference? The difference is that in one case he can see how it's not conforming to mitzvah regulations, and he'll grow up, he's not going to know what the mitzvah is really supposed to look like. But in the case of the ownership of the lulav, he's not going to perceive any difference in what this lulav is like. So it's not going to affect how he's going to grow up. So, therefore, it should be fine. Now, yeah, that's all very well and good if we don't care about the katan's actual fulfillment of the mitzvah. But if we think the katan does have some kind of personal chiyuv in the mitzvah, so then isn't that a problem? So, what we see here is that it seems to create a contradiction for us, except that the Ritva himself is of the opinion, like the Ramban, that the katan's not chayiv in mitzvahs in the first place, that the chiyuv chinuch is not on the katan at all. The Ritva says this in a few places. Do I give you that Ritva to look at? If not, I will give that to you tomorrow also then, Lynette. So, therefore, that answers the question, that the ritzvah is kapeda, that the mitzvah should only be done perfectly. That's true about something that will be perceived by the katan. But something that's going to be beneath the surface, even if it has halakhic implications, that we don't have to worry about so much. Okay, so far so good. Now, this also goes to the next, take the question to the next level. So it's one thing to say that the mitzvah has to be behechsher. What about behidr? Does the mitzvah have to be behidr? Should we say that's all one subject? How would you relate to that topic?
Hanukkah.
So Hanukkah certainly is one part of that. Maybe that we should leave to Sunday to see how that fits in. That's an interesting discussion, actually. I'll give you some. Did I give you a course about that? I did that. I think I showed you the Mishnah Berurah about that, right? Yeah, that's an interesting question also. So what do you think about that? So does a katan's mitzvah have to be behidr?
Level, mm-hmm. It sounds like you probably shouldn't
hinder. Okay, so should or must?
The potential to be there? Should.
Okay.
Probably not must.
Okay, so should, not must. So, Adiah, what are you saying?
Maybe the potential to be there.
Okay.
And the kid has to be able to do the mitzvah. They're five and chinuch at the point when they're old enough to do the mitzvah in its best, in its hitter form.
Okay.
But even if they don't do it in that way, but it has to be, the potential might have to be there.
Okay, so where are you getting that idea from?
I think I saw that in order to shake the lulav, you have to be able to shake it. So,
okay.
And you'll have to shake the lulav in order to do the best.
Okay, does that want to say?
Similar. An adult, what's his level of kriya when it comes to So does he have the light in there also? Or
okay.
Hotter?
Right, so all that I think we'll talk about more in our Hanukkah context. Maybe we'll be able to reinforce this point and to synergize this point. But, so Jad is saying what he said, because of a mucker, right? Because there is a din that prompts this question. Now we know that by each mitzvah, we have a different calculation as to when they are chayiv in the mitzvah. So the notion of chinuch is going to depend, the sliding scale. The logic of the mitzvah, as I'm mentioning, the logic of the mitzvah has to fit, or the katan has to be able to relate to what the mitzvah requires. So in the context of lulav, so what's the shear for a katan being chayiv in lulav? Katan hayodea le naneya. A katan that knows how to shake the lulav. So here, this prompts a whole discussion on a couple of different levels. And this is a whole sugya by itself, which maybe also we should do separately, the sugya of Nanuim by Lulav, which we could also just, no pun intended, branch out into. It really wasn't, just it came up with the thing. But that's a sugya that branches out from the sources, the question of what is the role of Nanuim as far as the mitzvah of Lulav is concerned. Because here we know that there seems to be a tension. Because the Gemara, on the one hand, says that mida'agbe nafikbe, that when you pick up the lulav, you're yotzei right away. And that's why we have a whole challenge how to manage the bracha, how to make the bracha before being yotzei. Because it's too easy to be yotzei before the bracha is made. So we have to come up with a chap to address that. And on the other hand, also no pun intended, the fact that we find this idea of being menaneya, the lulav, built into the chiyuv of the mitzvah. Because why should we say, katan hayodeya l'naneya, that's the standard. What if he doesn't? He knows how to pick it up. Kids can pick things up at a very, very early age. And so that's, which is an interesting thing to consider also. Sorry?
Isn't that a das
thing? Well, it's a pretty low level. You're saying you can get to the Agbe pretty easily. But okay, in any event, so the idea that the standard should be katan sheyodea l'naneya, why is that the standard? So this discussion that I mentioned you could branch out into there is what to figure out about just what is the role of Nanuim when it comes to the Luav, considering this idea that at the same time it seems like you can be Yotzei without them. So what exactly is the role? But it sounds like it's pretty clear that at least there is a clear value to shaking the Luav, so much so that that is certainly the perfect form of the mitzvah. Yes, sir.
What else would be a component of, what would be an alternative that the Gemara would suggest?
Well, the Gemara does say, mida'ag be'nafik, but that by picking it up, you are Yotze.
Yeah,
right?
That knows how to pick it up.
Oh, right, yeah, maybe so. Maybe this is a very low level. So what I thought you were getting at a minute ago is that because, as we know, children who are less than a year old can pick up things. So if we're going to use that standard, it's certainly going to precede any level of das by any definition. So maybe that's a reason why it's just simply not a discussion, and that maybe it's an interesting idea to consider, that maybe even though theoretically there's a mitzvah at that point, but there's simply no value in zeroing in on that, because that just isn't going to tell us anything. Because the age at which a child can pick up something is long before they have any understanding of the mitzvah, and there's no point in using that as a standard. It's also interesting in general to examine each of the standards that are given and to see how they play out. So, for example, when it comes to tefillin, right? So tefillin is the latest that we wait. So we have different minhagim about when to start putting on tefillin, but the most common minhag is a month before bar mitzvah, so that's the latest. And there, it's because we have this concern that he's not going to protect the tefillin properly. Say, katan sheyodea lishmor tefilav. So, does that mean that the mitzvah is about shmirah? Maybe. Or maybe no. It just means there's a competing value here. And that, yes, we want to train him in tefillin, but we also don't want him to disrespect the tefillin. So, there's a competition between the chinuch and this other issue, not disrespecting the tefillin, and therefore we come out with a different standard. So maybe the standard is not always purely defined by the earliest time you can understand the mitzvah itself. There can be other considerations.
It's not that rule across the board with all of the mitzvahs mentioned in there, the shlishi, though.
So perhaps
as soon as the kid's able to speak, doesn't matter what level of understanding he has, you teach him shema.
Maybe it depends what speaking means.
Like, right. I have no idea what that is, but...
Well, it depends on what you mean by idea. I mean, it could be that there's different gradations. Do we know what it is? And it could be there's different gradations of knowing. So as the Gemara sometimes suggests. So that's itself a tricky point. But it sounds like the notion of nanuim by luav, even though it's not mahake, can be yotzei without it, but it's clearly a part of the mitzvah. So it sounds like that becomes a standard in how we perceive when chinuch should be happening. So Jebediah was suggesting that maybe it has to at least be potentially possible. That the katan who knows how to shake, so at least he could potentially do the mitzvah in the perfect way. But it doesn't mean that if he doesn't do it in the perfect way, there's no value to the chinuch. It means that this is a standard because we want to at least potentially connect to the mitzvah in the perfect way. So here, there's a phrase which you're perhaps familiar with. The Gemara has an expression called Roy Lubila. Familiar with that phrase? Mm-hmm. That is an important idea. I actually have a... Does this work? Oh my goodness. Okay. Right, Kolaroi Lubila. Familiar with that phrase? And so there's a standard that when you have a mitzvah that's l'chachila. So l'chachila means that you don't have to do it that way. The diavad is kosher also. But it has to at least be possible. Kolaroi Lubila. Then we say that ein vila so makabes. If it's Roy Lubila, then you don't have to have Bila. So what does that mean? It means that the context is a mincha. A mincha has to be mixed up. Right? It has to be all bubble. If It's not bowl, okay, it's still kosher. But it can't be packed in so tightly that it's impossible to mix it up. If it's so tight it's impossible to mix it up, then it's no good. So what does that mean? It means that the potential has to be there. That's my royal review. If the potential is there, you don't have to actually do it. Okay? So you understand the principle? Bila means to mix up. So if the korban mincha is packed in so tightly that it's possible to mix it, that's no good. But if it's possible physically to do it, but you just didn't, the korban is still good, the mincha is still good.
Are there any limitations on when you can apply this rule?
Oh, for sure. It's a big sugya. And when you say it, when you don't say it, absolutely. But it sounds like the idea is that when you have a lechachila and a b'di'eved, so that whole concept means b'di'eved, you can get away without doing the requirement lechachila, but it has to at least be possible. So maybe there's some kind of similar logic here, that if the katan is not going to shake the lulav, okay, but it has to at least be possible to shake the lulav, so we have to be dealing with a katan who's holding, again, no pun intended, in that possible standard. So here it may also be relevant, the Rashbam explains in Bava Basra, that the reason you have this rule is because when the potential isn't there for something which is l'chachila, there must be something fundamentally flawed about this object. In other words, the Torah said that you're supposed to mix up the mincha. So you happen not to. Okay, so maybe it's not ma'akeh. But if you have a concoction here where it's impossible to do what the Torah says to do l'chachila, you know what your problem is? You seem to have an item which is fundamentally different than the one the Torah was talking about. Because the Torah was clearly describing a situation where it was possible because the Torah says you're supposed to do it that way. So if it's not even possible, not only are you missing this detail, but you must have a fundamentally different situation. So you could borrow that expression here also, that explanation here also, and say that when it comes to chinuch, we need to at least be mechanich them in a way that if the mitzvah is the format that it's supposed to be. If they fall short, okay, they fall short, but at least we're giving them the whole context of the mitzvah, and that means that all the potential has to be there. Yes?
What's the source for taking Kalarai Lubila and Bila Samakaris and just applying it to everywhere in Balaf as opposed to just keeping it in the Karbanos?
Okay, because you have it at least one or two other places in the Chas. You have it by Kurim, you have it at a couple of other places. So it seems like there's a principle there. And that's basically the idea, that if there's something that's missing, then maybe the whole picture is different. So that could be here also. So just to sum up before we have to dive in, so I think what you could find here is a couple of different levels. There's maybe four distinctions you can draw. That, let's say we all agree that chinuch requires the mitzvah to be good. Question is, how good does it have to be? So the minimum is, we could say that it has to be kosher in every way that a child can perceive. But if it's not perceptible, like an issue in kinyanim, then it doesn't have to be kosher for that. The next level would be to say, it has to be kosher al pi din in every way. But just kosher. And then the next level, I'll skip for a second, go to the last level, is to say it has to be not only kosher, but has to be mahuter, has to be the best possible way. And in between those last two levels, you could say what we were just talking about now, and say it doesn't necessarily have to be mahuter, but it does have to be lechachila. And maybe there's a difference between the two. That there's a mitzvah that's really supposed to be done a certain way. That's more than just hiddur. That's about the real format of the mitzvah. And perhaps that's what we require. That maybe there's a difference between saying the lulav has to be in a shakeable format and saying that it has to be beautiful. Now, just parenthetically, as we turn to Mincha, so we'll just end with a Hanukkah board, because you know this is a common idea that's recited at Hanukkah time, and while we're saying these words, you might as well take it to the next level. That the question is always asked, why is it that the nes of the Pach HaShemen had to happen if we say that Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, so that Tamei oil could have been used by the Tzibur for the public needs. So why was there a whole miracle necessary? They could have just used the Tamei oil. So there are many, many answers to this question, but one of the answers that's given is Chanukah, is Milashon Chinuch, right? So that Chinuch, we want to always do in the perfect way. Chinuch should always be done, behidur should always be done, mechatchila. So here, it's one thing to say, on any random day, they could have lit the menorah betumah if that was all they had. But here, they're after re-inaugurating the Beis HaMikdash, it's a new chinuch. So that, they wanted to make sure to do everything black, do everything perfect, and therefore there was a need to make sure that everything was in place. So that's something that emerges directly from what we just see. Okay, so again, our goal is tomorrow really just to say a few more words, then hopefully by Wednesday to move on to a new sugya, and now to move on to Mincha. So who would like to daven for us? Do we have any volunteers? All right, Jen, you take a quick